You can find me on Studio B every Thursday, 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
Good day, wherever you are in this world. I hope you're having a great day here listening to Revolution Radio. Everybody asks for this. Revolution Radio. Where the information never sleeps.
Confuse dissent with disloyalty. We must remember always that accusation is not proof, and that conviction depends upon evidence and due process of law. We will not walk in fear one of another. We will not be driven by fear into an age of unreason if we dig deep in our history and our doctrine. And remember that we are not descended from fearful men, not from men who feared to write, to associate, to speak, and to defend the causes that were for the moment unpopular. We can deny our heritage and our history, but we cannot escape responsibility for the results. We proclaim ourselves, indeed, as we are, the defenders of freedom wherever it continues to exist in the world. But we cannot defend freedom abroad by deserting it at home. Cassius was right. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. And good luck.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're ready, because straight from downtown Columbus, Ohio, it is time for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
Okay, welcome to the show. Today's the third day of October, 2022. Don't forget, we are listener-supported here, so head over to our homepage. You can either go to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. Both will take you to our homepage. And please make a donation. We are listener-supported. Thank you very much. We'll break right into it today and see what we've got going on. Lots going on here. From what I understand, let's go over to RT.com and catch up on some news. This is an interesting statement. This is over at RT.com. Okay. NATO not obliged to assist Ukraine, German ambassador says. Berlin's envoy to the military bloc clarifies that NATO will actively fight for a non-member state. Germany's permanent representative to NATO has explained that the U.S.-led bloc is not obliged to offer direct military assistance to Ukraine. Rudiger Koenig added that its members want to avoid a major war. Well, you're doing a shitty job, Koenig, okay? Because from what I understand, what the West is going to do over the next several days is make an ultimatum to Putin to get out and deliver up these territories, and he's not going to do that. Okay. Now, we have many reports that Putin is getting his nuclear weapons ready. Okay. That's been filtering in. Now, what happened today is the Russian State Duma, now that's going to be their parliament, right, ratifies the accession treaties for former Ukrainian territories. The State Duma has unanimously ratified the treaties on the accession of the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics, DPR and LPR, as well as Kherson and Zaporizhzhia regions to the Russian Federation. President Vladimir Putin submitted the documents during four former Ukrainian territories to the lower house of parliament on Sunday. All four voted overwhelmingly in favor of joining Russia in referendums held between September 23 and 27. Addressing legislators before the vote, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said that accession will serve the interests of all people over a multi-ethnic country. He added that Kiev had oppressed Russian-speaking people, which made the existence of certain territories within the Ukrainian state impossible. So, and if you go back and read his speech, which we've been analyzing, right, that Putin gave the other day when he signed off on these votes, which he then he forwarded to the Russian legislature, you know, he basically sees this as a class of civilizations, class of cultures. And the names that he called the Western elites have really rattled their cages. Okay. I just think that Biden and these idiots are stupid enough to attack. I think they're going to attack him. I think they're going to attack Russia. I think NATO is going to put ground troops into Ukraine. They're going to attack Russia or these provinces, try to push them out. If they do that, and it's over. Okay. So the other thing is the Chinese. We're the Chinese in the middle of this, right? I mean, if you're China and you're thinking if Russia goes down and Russia loses, what's stopping them from knocking you off, China? So, you know, there could be, I mean, look, let's hope it doesn't happen, but, you know, the Chinese or the Russians may strike first if they feel that's in their interest. This is not good. Not good at all. You have, Biden needs to be removed from office because he's incompetent, he has dementia, and he has deep personal, ethical conflicts over what's occurred in Ukraine with him and his son. Here's how the Russians see this, okay? Now, this is, again, this is over at RT.com, right? Russia faces the fourth European NATO Reich, says Zhuganov. The other thing is the Pope has come out and warned the world on nuclear war. Communist Party leader has compared the U.S.-led alliance to Nazi Germany. Russia is currently involved in a confrontation with the fourth European NATO Reich, the Communist Party leader Gennady Zhuganov claims. We must be well aware the new army has gathered against us, the fourth European NATO Reich, where 30 countries united, all their regiments and armies, Zhuganov said while addressing the State Duma on Monday. With his remarks, the politician effectively compared the U.S.-led NATO to Nazi Germany. Well, that's an apt comparison, don't you think? Known as the Third Reich. During World War II, several European allies and satellite states fought alongside Nazi Germany, while its own military incorporated numerous volunteer units provided by other European nations. He made the statement as the Duma gathered to vote on a cession of the Donetsk and Lugansk People's Republics, as well as the former Ukrainian regions of Kherson and Zaporizhzhia to Russia. Well, I don't know, man. This ain't good. From what I understand, what we're going to do is we're going to give him an ultimatum over next week and tell him to get out. And if not, I think we're going to attack. I think NATO's going to hit Russia. That's a shame, man. It's really a shame that it's come to this. We're pumping $1.5 billion a month. That's what we know. That's what they'll admit over there. And this whole thing is not good. There's going to be all kinds of collateral effects for all this. So let's see here. Well, I'll keep going here. Okay. right. Russia, this is again, Archie.com. Russia has clear policy on the use of nuclear weapons, says the Kremlin. All right, let's take a look, man. Get this thing to load. Come on. All right, Archie.com. Russia has clear policy on use of nuclear weapons, so says the Kremlin. Spokesman was responding to a weekend call from the head of Chechnya. Emotions should play no role in discussing the use of nuclear weapons, Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov has said. Adding that Moscow has a clear policy in this regard, his comments came shortly after Ramzan Kadyrov, the leader of the Chechen Republic, suggested that Russia should use low-yield nuclear weapons against Ukraine. Speaking to reporters on Monday, Peskov said, "The governors and heads of regions of Russia have the right to express their personal opinion and to give assessments on issues." This includes Kadyrov. Peskov has said contributed a lot to Russia's military campaign in Ukraine. Asked if that remark would be considered an inappropriate display of emotion, a Kremlin spokesman said that in Russia, the use of nuclear weapons is based on what is laid down in their respective doctrine. There can be no other considerations here, he noted. And he's got Petraeus coming out and saying that the Russian military has collapsed. Come on, man. That's why he got kicked out of the military. You're a dumbass for saying. I mean, the guy's stupid, man. Right? We'll go to his disinformation in a minute. John Den jackass. Okay, so Kadyrov made his comments to Telegram on Saturday in response to the retreat of Russian forces from the town of Krasny Liman in Donetsk region. The Russian Defense Ministry said the pullback was due to emerging threat of encirclement by Ukrainian forces. A Chechen leader called for Russia to take more drastic measures in Ukraine, suggesting martial law in Russian regions bordering Ukraine and the use of low-yield nuclear weapons. All right. The latest version of Russia's nuclear doctrine, published in 2020, states Moscow reserves the right to use atomic weapons only if such arms or other weapons of mass destruction are being targeted at the country or is being faced with an existential threat from conventional arms. Well, let's go over to David Petraeus. What kind of bullshit is he slinging today? And these people are just good liars. All right, Mr. Petraeus, ex-CIA chief, outlines potential U.S. response if Russia uses nukes, Archie.com. David Petraeus predicted that NATO would take out Moscow's forces in retaliation. Retired U.S. Army General David Petraeus has predicted that Washington would lead a devastating response to any Russian nuclear attack in Ukraine, wiping out all of Moscow's forces and military bases in the region. Wow, David. Petraeus, who briefly served as CIA director after his counterinsurgency strategy fell in Afghanistan, told an ABC News interview on Sunday, "We would respond by leading a NATO, a collective effort that would take out every Russian conventional force that we could see and identify on the battlefield in Ukraine, also in Crimea, and every ship in the Black Sea." Okay. He admitted he was speaking hypothetically and was not aware of the Biden administration's plans, but Petraeus said that Washington should avoid nuclear for nuclear exchange, but you have to show that this cannot be accepted in any way. In such a scenario, the U.S. would be going to war directly with the world's largest nuclear power. As President Vladimir Putin warned last month that Moscow would use all available means to protect Russia and its people if the country's territorial integrity is in danger. The White House interpreted it as a threat to use nukes against Ukraine and responded by threatening catastrophic consequences. Okay, Joe Biden, look, this guy, Biden's not going to be president much longer, I'll tell you that much. Here's what Petraeus said. "He is losing, and the battlefield really he faces is, I think, irreversible," Petraeus said. He added, "There was no amount of shambolic mobilization, which is the only way to describe it, No amount of annexation, no amount of even veiled nuclear threats can actually get him out of his particular situation. So apparently, I don't know if he's being a disinformation agent or what, but they think that he's bluffing. He's not bluffing. Okay. He's not bluffing. All right. Petraeus said that Putin is trying to intimidate European nations into dropping their support for Ukraine. I don't think he's going to out-suffer Europe. Europe's going to have a tough winter, but they'll get through it, and I don't think they'll crack on the issue of support for Ukraine. Well, there we are, David. There we are. Okay? The people in Europe don't want to be melted for your friends, your handlers, banksters, right? I'm sorry. That's just not the way it's going to go for him. I'm surprised that Hijacker is not with us today. There's a lot going on, man. Where are you at, man? Come on, man. Anyway, Hijacker, if you're here, come on in. Let's continue. All right. So I wouldn't believe anything that David Petraeus said. That he's being a disinformation agent, and I wouldn't believe a word he said. I wonder what the Chinese are going to do, huh? All righty, let's see what we got here. Oh boy. Listen to this. This is actually everybody's getting into the come on into water's fine, everyone. This is Archie.com. Poland formally demands 1.2 trillion from Germany. Warsaw wants Berlin to negotiate a final settlement on consequences of Adolf Hitler's aggression. How about that one? This is not good, man. Let's see here. So right now, we don't know which way this is going to go, but it's not looking good. Okay? It's not looking good at all. Well, I'd say we... We got ourselves in a mess over there, haven't we?
It is a mess.
And I'm glad you just popped in. I was just looking through the articles here. From what I understand is I've listened to a few insiders, and they're basically stating that the West, NATO, and the United States is going to give Putin an ultimatum within the next several days to get out of these territories or else. What are your thoughts on that?
Is this what Petraeus said? Is that what he said?
No, Petraeus is saying that if Putin uses any kind of nuclear weapons, that we'll wipe out his military. That's what Petraeus said. So, but Mike from around the world, I guess apparently I don't know if he's retired military or CIA or active or whatever, and he's come out and said that the West is formulating an ultimatum that they're going to deliver to Putin. And, of course, Putin's not going to vacate these territories, and it's going to be on. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I think we would hear something out of the Russian press first if they've been given an ultimatum, because I don't think they would hold that back too long. They'd hold it back for an initial diplomatic parlay, but I don't think they'd keep it a secret too long. They benefit from the world knowing that they've been given an ultimatum, because ultimatums are not diplomacy. I don't care what people say, diplomacy means you're open to discuss everything and at least hear what the other party has to say. And then go ahead and say no, but, you know, from the beginning, when diplomacy is not meet all our demands. That's brinksmanship. I mean, that's, you know, you're just up there trying to intimidate the other side. The diplomacy means the opposite of that. It means you want a resolution outside of ultimatums, because ultimatums are a prelude to physical conflict, you know, kinetic war.
Right.
So I don't see anything on RT about it. They're still going with the – they're calling NATO the Fourth European Reich. And that was the title of – if you remember right. Jim Mars, the prolific alternative topics, you know, investigations writer Jim Mars, who passed away a few years ago, maybe right. 3-4 years ago now. He wrote a book called The Rise of the Fourth Reich. Came out maybe like 2014 or something like that. It was one of his last books. Very good book, though. It details the rise of the technocrats, the rise of people like Fauci and Birx,
right,
and Milley and Petraeus and all these people, you know, the Clintons, all these people that run our country, but they get all these jobs and they have all this government money and sanction and privilege, but most of the time we haven't voted for them. I mean, nobody voted right. for Hillary Clinton to be the Secretary of State. You know, that was an appointment. And that's what many people on the left forget. Nobody voted for her for that. And we've discussed before, these technocrats are famous for having plans to avoid the public referendums on their behavior. They have these superdelegates in their primary process, and then they create all these positions within the executive branch and the the permanent bureaucratic state that you can't fire them from, you know, like these SDS, what is it, the super bureaucrats that Obama made permanent controllers of the deep state, you know. And when we say deep state, I mean, it means many things. But one of the things it means is permanent Washington, people who don't have to face public referendums, but they run the FBI. They run the CIA, and they can run it across several administrations. Think J. Edgar Hoover, how long he was entrenched there. Think Anthony Fauci. Been in his job since 1984.
Wow. The
That's the deep state.
Yeah. AIDS crisis. Yeah.
So, highest paid government employee, if you can even call him an employee. So, look, we're getting mixed messages. What I see, like, okay, so let's go through headlines on RT.
Sure.
Russia State Duma ratifies accession treaties for former Ukrainian territory. So they've the Duma's accepted them. So it's done now. And now today you've got the German ambassador, Berlin's envoy to NATO, is saying in an interview that NATO is not obliged to assist Ukraine.
Yep.
So, I mean, Germany, this is the ultimate motive to blow up that pipeline, is that Germany was probably in talks. There's probably a strong industrialist faction within Germany that wanted to come to a deal with the Russians. And because that was taking place, they went ahead and, you know, blew up the pipeline. The NATO, the pro-American NATO Europeans and the Americans went ahead and did that, in my opinion. And so, like I said, Europe is fracturing along two lines, people who are pro-Russia and anti-Russia. And to pro-Russia, it doesn't mean you got to love Putin. It just means you want to make a deal. Here's what he says. As Germany's representative to NATO stressed, that the military alliance as a whole, however, has no legal obligation to help Kiev repel Moscow's attack, as Ukraine is not a member state. So he said, we had peace, and now we see all of a sudden that one country is attacking another one just like that in Europe. But we don't have the Article 5 cannot be invoked because Ukraine isn't a member of NATO. And this is, what's his name, Koenig. Rudger Koenig, speaking with Der Spiegel. So I don't see a consensus yet. I see the U.S. pushing there to be consensus, but right. I see, like, Hungary is still getting gas from Russia. It's one of the last major European states to do so. So they haven't flipped. I mean, I know Poland is very anti-Russian. So they were more than happy to allow that pipeline to be damaged. But you've got the Defense Department saying, you know, lots of heavy fighting ahead. U.S. officials urge caution after Ukrainian gains. This is from Politico. Kiev's forces over the weekend captured the city of Lyman, which is strategic. It's a railway hub. And they're saying they're continuing to push east. And this is true to some extent. I don't know why they couldn't hold that river, but they said they were going to be encircled. And so they did pull back out of Lyman. I couldn't say what where the Russians are going to regroup. I would say it's probably going to be pretty soon. I don't think they're going to be pulling back too much further if they can avoid it. And I would expect a counterattack. But they're still gathering together their forces. So they say, there are lots of the U.S. Defense Department official said there's lots of heavy fighting ahead. He asked for anonymity when he discusses internal assessments. Another official said it's important strategically, but they still have a long ways to go about Lyman. So they're giving their take on what's going on. They're saying there's been some advances in Kherson as well, although I saw that, and they captured one small village that the Russians hadn't even held for very long. So they're kind of overstating it there. So.
All right, let's take a break and be right back. Don't go away.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
This is David Dungeon from Shiny Side Out. You're listening to Revolution Radio. And now we return you to Liberation Nation with Deacon John.
All right. Don't forget, we're listener supported. Go to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio and make a donation. So I really have to say, this is Obama and Biden's war. Before Obama became president, we didn't have any of this nonsense with the Russians, right? W. Bush didn't have an issue with it. Trump really didn't have an issue, but he got forced into it by the deep state. And so this is a war of the elites and their deep state. I don't think people understand. We really don't. I mean, what's our strategic interest there? You know, I mean, we've got NATO built up 30 countries, basically almost to the borders of Russia. I mean, to back the guy in the corner. And also, if he didn't take these territories, Russia would probably starve. Isn't that the breadbasket for Russia and parts of the world over there in those regions? You know?
I don't know about that. They don't have a huge population like we do. I mean, they got about 170 million. They have huge, vast areas. And actually, the areas that border Ukraine that are part of Russia right now have a similar productivity for wheat and other crops. You know, the Belgorod region and the regions there along the Black Sea. So I don't think they need Ukraine from that aspect, from a food aspect, but they need it strategically. And they, let's remember, the Donbass and Luhansk regions are two of the heavily industrialized regions that were invested in during the Soviet era to develop the aerospace and defense technology of the Soviet Union. So there's a lot of infrastructure there that makes you can kind of think of Luhansk as Pittsburgh and Donetsk as Detroit. So somewhat important.
Oh, yeah. Right.
If you're planning on, you know, making tanks and jets and things like that,
sure.
You know. So that's really, you know, why they really needed those areas. And, you know, there's multiple things. It's the strong Russian ethnic population there that causes angst in the native, you know, the current native Russians to see their brethren, you know, being repressed and persecuted by the West. And they know the history of the region, that region was not always part of Ukraine. It was, in fact, historically part of Russia. Anyway, I don't know about Kherson, but I know, you know, the area of Mariupol, the Donetsk, Lugansk, that's part of Russia, really. And Crimea, I think they fought the Crimean War back, you know, 150 years ago about that, and that became part of Russia. So those issues were decided, you know, two centuries ago, as far as those regions and trying to claim otherwise tries to set the boundaries at the most favorable point for your side, which, you know, why can't I just go ahead and say, hey, the U.S. conquered North America. What's all this talk about reparations? You know, I mean, I'll just go ahead. Hey, we conquered it. We conquered everybody. And that's the way it goes, you know. And so if Ukraine feels that a way about it, I guess I can feel that way about, you know, that, you know, we're just going to apply this rule that you've invented, liberals, to across the board, right? Yeah. Like you like to do, redefine things when it suits you and then forget that you redefined them when it doesn't suit you or make up something new. You know, situational ethics, that's what it's called, liberals, situational ethics. Mm-hmm. Conservatives don't go for that. Conservatives have principles. We might want to learn the definition of that word, liberals, because you don't know it. So, yeah, we've got this statement from the U.S. Defense Department at the end of this Politico article that says, let's see. Ukrainian troops burst through Russia's defensive lines and advanced rapidly along the western bank of the Dnipro River on Monday, recapturing a number of villages and threatening resupply lines for thousands of Russian troops. In Kherson, Russian forces are essentially in a defensive crouch. Well, that's the front line, for God's sakes. Of course they are. It shows the Ukrainians are capable of multiple operations. Yeah, but those aren't all Ukrainians, buddy. No way they are. Said Mick Mulroy, a former deputy assistant secretary of defense and retired CIA official. Yeah. I would say the last title is more important because the CIA has been running this covert war for 8 years. And why don't they quote the queen of Ukraine operations, Victoria Nuland? Where is she? She's the expert. I don't see her quoted or speaking on these articles. You know, maybe we could ask her about those bio labs as well, because that's when she disappeared, when she flubbed the bio lab question that, you know, when you tried to ask, there's no bio labs in Ukraine. And she said, well, yes, there are, but, you know, they're Soviet era thing. Most of them are Soviet era. That was the wrong answer. You don't answer with yes. You answer with no, and they said, except for. You don't say yes, Nuland, because it's all about optics. If he asks you and he sets you up for that gimme, you say no. It doesn't matter if it's a lie.
Yeah, a little marker, yeah.
So she blew it, and then she's gone. She's not, no more testimony, no more media appearances that I know of, and anything big. I think she might have appeared at some, you know, think tank things and stuff like that that nobody, you know, the public doesn't know about. But no more MSNBC appearances that I know of. So they said, looming at the end of this article, looming over the battlefield gains is the simmering threat that the conflict could turn nuclear. So this is Politico, they're hinting at. Western officials are concerned Putin could use the annexations as an excuse to claim Ukrainian forces are attacking Russian territory and escalate the conflict, including potentially using tactical nuclear weapons. The U.S., however, has not received any indications that would prompt it to change its strategic posture. National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby said on CNN Monday, adding, we're watching this as closely as we can. Well, I would recommend that, John, just in case, you know, you see a mushroom cloud, you might want to watch that as well. But yeah, that's what they're saying. So they're bringing up this topic, but as diplomatic, you know, and this is as diplomatic as it gets from the administration, this Politico article, even though it's stridently making its claim, advancing its claims about you know, the significance of the Ukrainian offensive. And it, I noticed nowhere in this article where it emphasizes that the Russians have called up 1 million reserves and are about to are deploying them right now. Mm-hmm. So there's no, oh, there might be a counterattack. They might be prepping for a counterattack. They might be allowing you to overextend into regions that they know the exact layout of. So when they counterattack, they know exactly where to hit you. Maybe. So, but this is what you hear in the Hill right here. McMaster on Putin threat. So this is General McMaster, H.R. McMaster, former National Security Advisor. I think he's the one that, yeah, he was under Trump and he screwed Trump, you know. He was not a asset to Trump, but he was kind of forced on Trump after they got rid of Flynn. So McMaster on Putin threat. quote, if you use a nuclear weapon, it's a suicide weapon. Oh, so diplomatic, McMaster. So he went on the Sunday on CBS on the Sunday Face the Nation, and he said, H.R. McMaster said on the air that he cautioned Putin against carrying out his threat of a nuclear attack, saying it would be a suicide weapon. McMaster's a retired U.S. Army lieutenant general who served as a national security advisor to President Trump. He also told CBS Margaret Brennan that despite Putin's threats, the Western world does not have to respond with the same escalation. Quote, I think the message to Putin is if you use a nuclear weapon, it's a suicide weapon, McMaster said, adding that the response from NATO and the United States doesn't have to be nuclear. And that's why, really, I don't think he has to use nuclear weapons. He's got these large fuel air bombs. He's got a lot of drones and Kinzhal missiles. And he's got loads of artillery, and he's called the reserve. So I think for the time being, it behooves him to not use nuclear weapons. But he might consider bringing out more of his frontline, ranged artillery and rocket artillery equipment, and really ramping up the airstrikes as far as at least targeted locations, because that in the areas where the forces are, the Ukraine forces are, and of course probably NATO forces, he still rules the skies with the S-400 and S-500 being much more powerful than anything we can do to check them. So really, they should have at least somewhat trustworthy air superiority on the front line. I wouldn't say too much beyond that, but in the 50-mile, 100-mile region around the front line, they probably have pretty good air superiority if they're really deploying their S-400s and S-500s. So McMaster also said on Sunday that Putin is under extreme pressure amid the war in Ukraine and a partial mobilization order issued last month to draw up some 300,000 reservists in Russia. The mobilization order drew widespread protests and has caused thousands of Russians to flee the country. Of course, they don't say that at least a decent amount of those that fled, I would say maybe 20%. I think they were Russian Jews who were fleeing to Israel. So it's not all just young people who don't want to serve. It's some people who just don't want to be there for the war. And others are fleeing to other – and they don't mention like the oligarchs and other wealthy people are fleeing to Turkey. They're being welcomed into Turkey as a kind of neutral place for them to take their booty. So McMaster concluded saying, what we might be at here is really at the precipice of the collapse of the Russian army in Ukraine, a moral collapse, McMaster said. They must really be at a breaking point. If you look at the numbers of casualties, the vast area they're trying to defend, and now, of course, Russia is trying to mobilize conscripts and send them to the front untrained. That's incorrect. These are reservists who are trained. And they gave the wrong number. They're calling up almost a million, three waves of 320,000 or something. So they're really not giving all the facts correctly. But to put that nuclear language in there should be concerning, because it has not – basically they're telegraphing that it's not going to back them off. And then when you followed up with what Petraeus said, where he's predicting the U.S. would lead NATO response to take out Russian forces if Putin uses a nuclear weapon, we're really the stage is set for, if not a nuclear confrontation, an extreme conventional conflict, which we see the use of the most powerful conventional weapons in each side's arsenal possibly, especially since we brought in those HIMARS rockets. And I really think, despite all the talk, that the real line in the sand is going to be if NATO weapons attack a significant Russian city that is in, the pre-annexation borders. if they really attack like Belgorod in a major way, or there's a major invasion into Russia proper, that is going to do it. I think you're going to see a big, big response. So that's why they really haven't done that yet. It's all been very small attacks. So, anyway, and to threaten this as we're going into winter, even Petraeus brings it up when he says that, as you know, the Russians have outsuffered Napoleon and the Nazis and so forth, but I don't think he's going to outsuffer Europe. Europe's going to have a tough winter. They're going to have a reduced flow of natural gas, but they'll get through it. And I don't think they'll crack on the issue of support for Ukraine. Well, you haven't seen the protests yet there, Petraeus. And, of course, you'll be toasty warm in your little mansion there. So it's nice to wax idealistic and romantic about the glory of war and the morality of standing up for basically a gangster state, money laundering state like Ukraine. And that's not to say that the majority of the people there are gangsters, but their government certainly is. And it's been had a long-term relationship with the deep state here and people like Nancy Pelosi and her family and the Bidens, of course, with Hunter Biden. So this talk just tells me we're moving into a more extreme version of conflict in the near future, and just as winter is setting in. So I think it's going to be difficult conditions for many civilians to endure across Europe this winter. As a side note to that, one of the last holdouts against going along with boycotting Russian gas is Hungary and Viktor Orban. And right now, you've got Germany. Germany. I don't know why I said Hungary. That's a different story. Germany, in the wake of gas shortages, is now seeking out alternatives to even the U.S. because by buying too much U.S. liquid natural gas, they're going to skyrocket prices here, which I have in another story in a moment here. But what Germany has just done to try to find an alternative is they've approved a huge arms deal with Saudi Arabia that is going to get them in return a lot of oil and natural gas from Saudi Arabia. And that's in this story from it's called The Cradle. I think it's a German website, but it's here posted on Zero Hedge. And it's saying that on 29 September, Berlin approved a number of new weapons export deals with Saudi Arabia, which breaks the 2018 ban over Riyadh's brutal war in Yemen, which they've been persecuting for a long time, trying to take over at least a portion of Yemen for various reasons, backing a faction that they're supporting in Yemen to take over the country. So Germany's economy minister Robert Habeck said the deals were approved by the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz during his recent visit to Saudi Arabia. They fall under a joint export program with Spain, Italy, and UK, and will amount to equipment and ammunition for Eurofighters and Tornado warplanes, amounting to $35 million. They're breaking their policy of exporting to an active war zone. So it looks like we're not seeing exactly how much they're going to get in return, but it looks like Germany is going to get access, a deal to import more energy from Saudi Arabia with this deal. So it's another sign that they want this conflict to continue. They're trying to shore up Germany so they don't have to deal with the Russians. So they blew up this pipeline, and then they got Saudi Arabia to come in and bolster their energy, Germany's energy supplies. So the public there does not protest en masse as they were starting to do. And in an update from who was responsible for possibly or was possibly responsible for the Nord Stream pipeline sabotage, you now have a significant retired U.S. Army colonel, Douglas MacGregor, who has come out and said that the U.S. did likely attack the Nord Stream pipelines to isolate Germany from Russia. And this is from Summit News today, and it says a former Pentagon advisor says the most likely culprits behind the Nord Stream pipeline blast are the United States and Britain, and that the attack was carried out to prevent Germany from bailing on the war in Ukraine. Retired U.S. Army Colonel Douglas MacGregor made the comments during an appearance on the Judging Freedom podcast. MacGregor said the process of elimination rules out Germany because they are dependent on Nord Stream for their energy security, and it did not benefit Russia either to sabotage its own infrastructure, as we've talked about. He said, quote, "Would the Russians destroy their own pipeline? 40% of Russian gross national product or gross domestic product consists of foreign currency that comes into the country to purchase natural gas, oil, coal, and so forth. So the Russians did not do this. The notion they did, I think, is absurd," MacGregor said. Referring to Polish Minister of Parliament Radoslaw Sikorski's infamous deleted tweet in which he wrote, "Thank you, USA," MacGregor noted, "Who else might be involved?" Well, the Poles apparently seem to be very enthusiastic about it. And I think that Minister of Parliament is actually married to an American neoliberal Democrat, who writes for the New York Times, Ann Applebaum. I think that's the case. It's either she is married to him, or they have some family relation, very, very close family relation. But I think that's it. So here's somebody, Douglas MacGregor, Colonel Douglas MacGregor, who comes out and says that it's highly likely that Washington was behind the explosion. And I think the evidence definitely points in that direction. So because you've already got, like, here, headline, "Revolution in the Air as Brits Burn Power Bills Amid Historic Energy Crisis." Mm-hmm. So they're just burning their power bills and saying, freeze profit, not people. Eat the Tories. Can't afford to live. Don't pay UK. You know, and they're out in the street, you know, with a barbecue, just putting their energy bills in there and burning them. So this type of uprising is going across Europe, and it was happening in Germany, and they're trying to tamp it down. But they're saying here at oilprice.com that American energy bills are set to soar this winter. And the reasons are the global energy crisis may finally be coming to America. It says, as Europe scrambles to secure LNG supplies, American companies are racing to lend a hand. With more American liquid natural gas flowing to Europe, the U.S. may be facing increased electricity bills this winter. Domestic oil production remains nearly a million barrels per day below the monthly record level just set before the COVID-19 pandemic caused production to plunge. The all-time monthly high for oil production took place on November 2019 at 13 million barrels per day. The all-time annual high was also in 2019 when U.S. production averaged 12.3 million barrels per day for the year. Current U.S. oil production is 12.1 million barrels per day. Well, the average for the year is so far as 11.9 million barrels per day, which is on pace to be the second highest ever annual U.S. oil production. So we're producing oil, and we could produce more. But again, the bottleneck is refining capacity. Because according to Greenies, we can't build more refineries. And so, enjoy your higher oil prices. We can use 12.1 million barrels per day. We just can't refine it quickly enough so it can come to market in an organized fashion so that it can keep prices lower. You know, and who does this help? It helps the oil companies. And even if many of the oil companies have great people that work there, vital people to our economy. But the people who own those companies are the ones that are engineering this. It's not the people who work there. It's not even the CEOs know about it, but it's the people who own and have owned these oil companies for a long time and the people that they pay to be their lackeys in the government. And this is using green policy to create artificial scarcity to drive up the price of oil so they make billions. Because the green policies are a bunch of BS. And I posted on my Telegram account this weekend that they've gotten – the green policies have gotten so ridiculous in China that they're actually – I have video on my Telegram channel, Dude's News, that the Chinese are actually spray painting grass, trees, and mountains green with green oil paint to cover up their mining operations, to cover up their pollution. They're actually they staple leaves to dead trees.
Oh my God!
They put out these mats, these nets that have all these leaves on them over these mined and destroyed and polluted mountains that they mine the lithium out of and stuff. They just roll over these huge green mats over it. Say, look at our wonderful nature. I mean, there's video of all this stuff. I might say it's absolutely insane. But this virtue signaling is about the same here, because all it does is cause suffering and misery. It doesn't help the temperature. It doesn't help anything to restrict the production. Nothing. It does nothing. There is no I put on my site a week ago, 1,200 scientists, almost 1,300 international scientists came out and said there is no evidence of climate change from CO2.
Right.
Zero. These are all scientists. They put a letter. It's the climate. It's the World Climate Declaration. Look it up. It's on my site, Dude's News. And they all, the least of them knows 10 times more than Al Gore or John Kerry. Okay. So, I mean, wake up, people.
It's a hoax.
Yes. Yep. And so, you know, a lot more news. I mean, we're about out of time. I got headline: home prices are crashing fastest pace since the Lehman bankruptcy in 2008. We got gas prices at all-time high in Los Angeles again. So we're heading into inflation is kicking back in again, because what they're doing is screwing up the economy so bad that the normal mechanisms can't allow it to recover. So they're causing the problem. Biden administration and the green tards.
Green tards. Good one. All right. Tell us about your Telegram channel.
All right. I just did a big update last night. I'll try to put a few more stories tonight. Dude's News on Telegram. Check it out. We'll see you tomorrow, Deacon. Take care.
Radio.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. Imagine.